Good morning, everybody. It's time for the Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. It's Elder Care Radio, only on News Radio 890 925 KDXU. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
It's Wellness Wednesday, and we are excited to be here. Excuse me. It's this opportunity to always be learning and searching and coming up with content that we think is useful and appropriate for this community. And so we really enjoy these opportunities.
And we're excited about our message today. We're glad you're here. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. So we've covered a lot of different things on this program, and we've touched on Alzheimer's a few times, but we wanted to look at this just a little bit differently. And so we really want this to be a community thing. The deal is we've got some information, a little bits of information. There haven't been huge studies on this, but there's some promising insight. And I think on the studies side, the reason there haven't been is because this doesn't have anything to do with a medication that somebody's going to get rich on.
Right.
So there isn't, that drive to do studies. We're talking about just things that people can integrate into their care and love for people with dementia, Alzheimer's. And this seems to go across the board, but it's also not going to be universally the same. And so we want to give you some information. We hope that we can get the community to kind of get involved and come up with ways to implement this and see how effective it can be.
Such important information for our community to be able to communicate with their loved ones more fully and to feel like they have hope and that they are able to reach their loved one with dementia and Alzheimer's. Very important studies, and I agree with Richard. I think that there should be more done, but again, if there isn't a financial incentive or benefit at the end, it's hard to encourage the masses or the deep pockets to
The powers that be.
Yeah, the powers that be to do more of this research. However, we found some really interesting studies, and we want to share that with you today.
So we wanted to start with This Week in Hospice. We were having a conversation with a lovely lady, and she, as we were talking about how we are trying to do different, with palliative care and bringing a lot more tools to the table for those people who are in need of care at the critical part in their life. She said, I know this story. And so she related the story, and it was that there was a researcher who had been trying to find out if there's a difference in cognitive effects from dementia and Alzheimer's between those that had high levels of education and those that had low levels of education. And so they divided up these people in these two groups, and they were kind of working with them and trying to find an inroad into that deal. And they went to the group that had the lower level of education, maybe just a high school degree, and trying to find some interaction. And ultimately said, well, let's write a story, right? And so held up a picture of a person and said, we need a name for this person. And it took a long time, but ultimately one of the people in the group yelled out, maybe Ralph, right? And then somebody else said something else, and they said, well, we'll go with Ralph. That was the first one. And then they just asked the question, so what does Ralph do? And pretty soon there was a lot of conversation that was being had, and these people who had been somewhat shut away and not participating were now actively engaged in building a story based upon their their own capacity. And it was about imagination. And imagination is maybe one of the last tools that leave us when we are suffering from dementia. And so it was kind of enlightening for them. And so they started doing more of these activities. And then they brought the caregivers and the loved ones of these families in and just had them sit around the outside of the room. And they went through this again, this
exercise.
Yeah.
Right.
And those people were amazed, and everybody was laughing at the story, and everybody was having a good time. And it was a tremendously empowering experience for them. And so that started them on this journey of, okay, so how do we do this more? And I think that's what we want to talk about today, is how do we make this effective? And we're going to try and change some perspectives here, because I think sometimes we get mired down in some things, and we'll cover that.
I think perhaps if we just look at the exercise again and realize that we started out with loved ones, patients, dementia patients, who possibly, you know, were fearful of speaking out. Maybe they did recognize that they weren't sure of the question being asked. But when the questions became part of everyday life scenarios from childhood to adulthood, you know, the creative part of let's name this person, let's give this person an activity, be that a job or a hobby, the entire crowd started to throw out ideas. Mm-hmm. And the participation went from, you know, no participation to everyone wanting to share an idea and participate in this exercise. I think that from the leader's standpoint, it really hit home that those basic understandings and principles of knowledge that we learn from infancy, you know, in our early childhood, none of that goes away, and that desire to participate and be involved and accepted and part of the team remain.
So there were some things that happened in this that are important to kind of pull out and talk about a little bit. So there are some things that we know when dealing with patients who have limited mental capacity that they know that they have a problem, and that kind of shuts them down. And so some things that we should always try and do, you know, we should always be friendly and have a soft tone. We should always, you know, talk in, you know, in positives without being aggressive. And
encouragements, right?
Right. And we should try and watch for nonverbal cues. Things that we probably already know. You know, if somebody's licking their lips, they may not be able to verbalize that they're thirsty, but maybe they are. And so, you know, looking for those kind of activities. But one of the things that they point out is to be positive and reaffirming as quickly as possible, right? Praise them for every little thing. And that's what happens when they're involved in these activities where it's just imagination and anything they do is positive. Now they can use their brain. They're not limited by their brain. They're actively using part of it, and that, you know, with the positive response allows them to continue to do that. So it's that, you know, as we kind of looked at this and started, you know, digging down through it, it really gets exciting to think that this may be something we could do. And I think we all have the ability and the opportunity to. And one of the things we read, I thought this was interesting. And so they said, you forgot my name? That doesn't matter. Give me a new name. And we've had plenty of conversations with people who've had experiences where, you know, they're working with their mother and their mother doesn't remember who they are. But when you say your name, they remember you as a younger child maybe, and they'll tell you about that. Don't feel that they're ignoring you, because they are remembering you. That, you know, that's important for you to feel satisfied that they have a memory and it's positive about you. But if the new you that they're dealing with doesn't seem to be the one that they remember, then don't be afraid to let them name you and know that that's another personal connection.
Share a sweet story. Early on in our marriage, Richard took me back to Oregon to meet his grandmother, who was suffering with Alzheimer's, and she was pretty severe. And his uncle Raymond, as we were going in, reminded us that she may not recognize us at all, that she might even be angry that we were there visiting her when she didn't know us. So as we went in, Uncle Raymond, you know, introduced Richard to Grandma and said, Grandma, do you remember Richard? This is your grandson, Richard. And she looked at him and she said, oh, Richard, I had a grandson named Richard. I love Richard. He's such a nice boy. And so Richard's, you know.
That was a dementia kicking in.
Right. And Richard says, Grandma, it's me. I'm Richard. I'm your grandson. She says, oh, Richard, I had a grandson named Richard. I love Richard. He's such a nice boy. In that moment, I think we realized, okay, there is a disconnect. So how do we communicate in a positive way without, you know, offending, mm-hmm. and still be receptive to her abilities, not our desires for her to understand or recognize who we are, but how she can just tell us stories about this sweet grandson, Richard, without it, her realization that he was standing before her. So she went on to tell us a few stories. You know, we did just ask, tell us about Richard. What did he do that was so nice? Well, he liked to play games with me, and he used to play card games with me, and he could really challenge her. And she remembered that, but she never did key in that Richard was standing before her.
And I could have gone two ways. And it wasn't that I, you know, I'm not better than anybody else. It's just that I wasn't with her all the time, you know, so I didn't feel like I needed that recognition. I was just going to see her for her sake, whatever that means. and so when she didn't recognize me, but she could tell stories, I was okay with that because I did have an impact on her life. I was important enough to remember, and that was completely satisfying for me. And so that's kind of the deal. I think when we're working with people on a daily basis and we get frustrated because they're not performing to our standards. And one of the studies that I read talked about how important memory is in society, that we have this incredible need to have this continuous line of thought that ties everything together, that our existence in life has to be, you know, tied into a lot of different things. So we have a chronological memory that gives us a beginning, middle, and end, but that we have these other relationships. And when that becomes disconnected, it can be very frustrating for the caregiver or the loved one because they may feel that, you know, they've lost something. And so one of the things said, and I like this phrase, forget memory. Mm-hmm. Focus on imagination, mm-hmm. right? Let's not worry about what they remember, what they don't, but let's do activities that focus on growth and opportunity. Not that imagination's going to cure them, but it can make life so much better for both parties. When we are having a good time, having a conversation, however meaningful or meaningless the conversation is, as long as we're having a good time, it's a good experience.
And there's a high probability that through allowing them to express in a way that they know how, in mm-hmm. a way that they are comfortable, you will be able to identify key indicators or, you know, past relationships of where that idea or concept of creativity may have come from. And in fairness, it is very, very difficult to look at our loved one, our mother, our father, somebody who we respect as the authoritarian and the holder of knowledge. And when we're looking at them, our expectation of their abilities are higher than they are capable of. And it can be sad and frustrating for us. But if we can just love them and allow them to communicate in a way that they are capable of communicating, and just remember that the expressions that they are giving do relate to you and their memory of you. Their creative responses come from somewhere in their history and in their past. And maybe we could just see their sweetness and their childlike behavior.
Right. So in trying to research this, doing some Google searching, you know, I was going with creativity and Alzheimer's. And what I kept running into were creative ways to keep Alzheimer's patients busy. You know, finding activities that maybe they're familiar with. You know, if they're a homemaker, maybe just folding some clothes or things was an activity that would keep them busy. But none of this touched on the potential creativity of an Alzheimer's patient. And so, you know, we can look at some creative activities, maybe painting and drawing. And I don't believe that that's going to be universal because a lot of people don't have any history. And the idea of reaching out into something they're not familiar with and trying to be successful would be overwhelmingly daunting. So if watercolors or something like that did work, I'd love to hear that story. What I hope that we can do in this is kind of open up the community and maybe get some sharing going on. Let us know things that you've tried that have been successful with your situation. You know, whether it's having somebody just give them some art materials to do that, maybe that's going to work. But I think the universal one that we can all rely upon would be storytelling and get those stories out there. And those stories don't have to mean anything.
Right.
In fact, you know, as we look at the idea of writing fiction, you know, when somebody's able to go off on a tangent that is unusual or outside of the norm, that's what makes fiction interesting. Not just telling, you know, the mundane everyday things. So this potential that somebody who doesn't have the vocabulary to say exactly what they mean, but they're their conversation starts to go off in a different direction, might be very, very enlightening and appealing. And as long as we just positively support them and we get these opportunities, you know, I think people have done this with their kids where they'll just kind of start a story and let the kid, you know, continue the story. And the start can be very simple. It can be show them a picture and have them describe something. And maybe, depending on the capacity of the person, it might be a very simple question. Maybe you have a picture of a dog and you say, tell me what this dog is, you know, where this dog's headed, right? Or what's this dog's name? You know, and just start there and allow that conversation to go. And this is going to be a test of the caregiver also to stay engaged in this and help open opportunities, not lead, but open opportunities for the Alzheimer's patient or the dementia patient to have the free opportunity to express themselves in a way that there is no judgment, that there's no right or wrong answer. And I think that's important. If they come to the conclusion that I don't have to be right, I can just express, then they may get real satisfaction out of this. Their day may be very full. And I think when those things happen, everything's better for everybody, for the caregiver, the family.
It really is about the human interaction, isn't it? But even more than that, as the patient or the dementia loved one becomes more relaxed and more engaged, studies have found that their verbalization skills increase and that what they start to talk about does have some relevancy. So you might be surprised to find some of the information that they share through their creative expression instead of trying to force an intentional expression.
And if we can surrender our concern about memory, if we can not worry about what somebody remembers as much as just allowing them to express. And this is where maybe we're going to change vocabulary, you know, because if somebody doesn't remember the word cup, right? I can't get a cup of water, but you can let them pick a word that you can learn to mean cup, then maybe we have a better level of communication because that word is going to be in a part of the brain that isn't damaged. Right. And so, you know, it may be interesting to see how much language changes if we're willing to surrender our belief that it has to, you know, that we have to play this game according to Hoyle. If you're, you know, over 75 years old, you might know that phrase. If we can surrender or suspend our desires personally about how we hope things are going to be and allow things to just happen organically and within the construct of the person that we're dealing with, that maybe we'll find some really great opportunities.
Very simplistically, maybe we should try and take our own desires out of the equation and just let our loved one be our loved one and let them express in the way that they can. And it's difficult. Mm-hmm. I absolutely give credit to the difficulties of being a caregiver of somebody who has dementia. But if we could just kind of let go of some of our own expectations, I think our ability to have really positive human interaction and communication with our loved ones will grow and develop.
Right. So that would be take control of the things you can control and just give up on the things you can't. If you can't control it, there's no reason to worry about it. If memory is no longer an option, then worrying about memory isn't going to change. There is not a drug on the market that will solve that problem. There is not a surgery. There's not an activity that will solve it. Certainly, there are things we can do to mitigate it, that we can slow it down a little bit and in every aspect, you know, in our diet, in our exercise, in our, you know, mental exercises, you know, they've done studies and they've said, you know, if we focus on a task long enough and hard enough, we will improve within the scope of that task. They used an example of speed remembering and they, you know, would flash pictures and have people try and remember. And the more they did that, the more they were able to remember at speed. That doesn't necessarily change all the rest of the problems that might exist. So if we're willing to put the effort in to try and slow those declines down, that's great. But we should also be looking for great opportunities to just enjoy whatever we can. Because if the family was sitting around and your kids were involved and we're just developing a story as a group, without any ridicule, without any, you know, and these are in my family. We, you know, we are very quick to correct and make comments, and those are the tools or the I'm going to call them skills that are probably not appropriate at this time. And so you have to really manage that. That if it, as long as it's positive, always positive comments, and laughing is positive. Though there's just so many good things that come from that. So we really, if you're going to do this, try and really have a plan and understand that your plan may not come out the way you want, and that's okay too.
Right.
You can't say, well, it didn't work the way I wanted it to. Hey, if it worked at all, then it worked. That's.
I think one of the things that really hit home to me when we were talking with this sweet woman that was in our office last week was she talked about how her mom, who had dementia, put together a family reunion, and everybody was coming together kind of for probably the last time that all the children and grandchildren and everybody, all of her loved ones, could be together at one time. And as she was planning this dinner, she was trying to consider how long her mom could be relative or engaged and okay in this setting. And truth be told, by the end, what she really realized and what, you know, really hit home to me was that the concern was more for the discomfort of the grandchildren and the children that would be present, not knowing how to deal with her mother. And so it was really helpful to kind of pattern through and walk through the scenario prior to this family reunion of, does it matter? Does there have to be an enriching conversation that your mother participates in? Does it have to make sense? Or can it almost be a game of Pictionary where the entire family is engaged in a creative conversation and allows the mother to participate in it, and she would be more focused and more engaged through the experience instead of chasing her around because she knows she doesn't fit. She can sense the discomfort in the family, so she wants to run. She wants to leave the house. And in the end, that's the positive experience that they have. They were able to actually sit and engage in a conversation that the story didn't always make sense, but the mother always felt comfortable participating because the kids and the grandkids realized that the story didn't have to make sense. It could be nonsensical or fiction, but in the end, as the family got together and talked about it, there were so many little indications of the mother's past and child rearing and examples of situations that she could bring into the story to engage the family and make it enjoyable.
So if you're listening to this show and you're thinking, okay, yeah, that sounds great. I'd love to have that happen. I'm just not sure how to make that happen. Give us a call. We'll talk about it. I don't have any perfect answers because everybody's a little different, but if we can help you kind of frame your
talk and explore.
Yeah, but frame your circumstance. You know, everybody's dementia results are different, and so if we know a little bit, maybe we can help you come up with some activities that you can do. We'd love to do that. So our telephone number, easiest number in Southern Utah, local area code 435, and then it's just 477 on the left of the keyboard or of the keypad, and 6999 on the right side, and then our website. pathwayhospicecare.com. But we also at the senior center are going to be doing blood and blood sugar and blood pressure tests for anybody who wants to come at the St. George Senior Center. We'd love to see you there. And then they are having a senior expo, and we'll be participating in that. So if you want to come to that, and we'll just kind of have a free discussion while we're there of anything you want, we'd love to see you.
Please come out and meet us. We love to meet our community and love to feel your support for our presence here. We appreciate all you do for us. Thank you so much for being here today.
And that number again, 435-477-6999.
Have a great week, everyone.